apostasy. There is just two ways of looking at the same thing. The idea of emptiness, of nothing being there, is actually the perception we get when everything disappears and vanishes. Especially the emptiness of not having a person inside who's in control of all of it. Emptiness is the same teaching as anatta, non-self, in the suttas, but just a different way of putting it. Instead of saying, no, there is no self, there's no me, no mine, no self, you can say we're empty. So the car is empty of a driver. We're in consciousness, which is a process, with nothing being conscious. So it is empty in that particular sense. The idea of non-attainment means, yes, there is past, there are fruition, there is such a thing as enlightenment. Where it says non-attainment, it points to the fact that there is no one being enlightened. In fact, you may say, the more you disappear, the closer you are to enlightenment. That's why I call it the art of disappearing. So everything disappears, and so when there's no person left, it's like trying to pin a medal for your achievements on a person with no body. How can you pin the medal? It doesn't stick anywhere. So you try and put the medal, the stream in it on somewhere. There's no place to fix the pin. There's nobody there. You try and give them this wonderful certificate of being an arahant, but there's no hand to receive the certificate. So the person gives you the certificate and it falls on the floor. It doesn't stick to anything. So in that sense, there is no attainment, because there's no person receiving the attainment. But much more accurately speaking, there is an attainment for no person. As it says in that Visuddhi Magga saying, very brilliant teaching, the path is but no traveller on it is seen. I mentioned that earlier, in the earlier part of this retreat. If you do the meditation, there's no path, which is too difficult. When you disappear, the path is so easy. That's why I say, let go, don't do anything. That's you disappearing. The path is but no traveller on it is seen. And the next part of that verse, Nirvana is, but not the person who enters it. But you have to disappear as well to use the game. Enlightenment. The simile which I gave, and I love making up similes, just to make it more interesting and easier for people to understand, it's a simile of a hot air balloon. Because you may have seen these big hot air balloons. I remember there was one actually in Singapore. I think DHL owned it, and you go up into the balloon, and then they pull you down again. Just in a, I don't know how much you have to pay. But in those hot air balloons, you go so high, and you can't get any higher. So you wonder, what should I do to get to the next level, to go higher? And what you have to do is you have to throw out all what they call the ballast, all the heavy weight in the basket underneath the hot air balloon. So you throw out everything, including your lunch and everything else, your bags, and when there's nothing in the balloon, then it goes really high as you can possibly go. And then you think, wow, nothing else to throw out of the basket, how can I go higher? And then you get the idea. Throw away the basket. So you untie the basket, and there's you just holding on to the balloon. And then you really go high. And then you get that high, and there's only you in the balloon, how can I go higher? And then you get an amazing idea, I'm going to throw me out. And then the balloon goes all the way from the bottom. So in that simile, all that your lunch and your bags and stuff, that's all your worldly attachment. You get rid of those first of all. Then it's just the basket, you and the balloon. And throwing away the basket means letting go of your body, your five senses. They always say that your body, especially my body at 60, 61 years of age, is a basket case. Waste of time now. Falling apart. So that's letting go of your body. And then it's just you and the balloon. To go to Nirvana, you have to let go and disappear. No me, no mind, no self. No driver, no observer. Then you go to Nirvana. That's how much you have to let go. So So it is an attainment in the sense it's not a person who attains it, but the attainment is true. It's real. That's how you can reconcile. Is it true that you place your mind inside the body and not outside, otherwise your spirit cannot come back to the body? When you're meditating, your stream of consciousness doesn't go anywhere, it stays inside. You never get lost, you always come out of meditation afterwards. I've been teaching meditation for over 40 years. Before I became a monk, I was teaching meditation. I've never lost anybody yet. Everybody always comes back to their body. No one's ever died, not once, in all the meditation retreats which I have given. You're perfectly safe. I'm even prepared to give you money back guarantee if you die on this retreat. You won't be able to get here to get the money back anyway, but nevertheless, you've got that guarantee. It is real, it is there, you're perfectly safe. So don't worry so much. That is a myth about not being able to come back to your body. So don't be scared by such things. It's not true. Is it natural to have your senses heightened, more sensitive after a period of meditation? Absolutely true. After meditation, the deeper you get, the heightened are your senses. You can feel so much more deeply. And you can see things you've missed before. But you go outside and those gardens are incredible after a deep meditation. I like to tell that story of the clump of bamboo at the gate of Cambridge University Botanical Gardens. My first retreat I did, allowed to go for a walk 1 hour every morning. And because I was studying at Cambridge, I knew the area close by to the boarding houses where we were meditating was the Cambridge Botanical Gardens. What a great place to have a walk in the morning. However, I never actually managed to get past the gate. 8 days out of 9, I went to the gate, to the back gate of the botanical gardens. I went in there. Right at the entrance was a clump of bamboo. And the very first day, when I had decent meditation, I looked at that bamboo, and my goodness, it was glorious. It was beautiful. It just sort of captivates you. Beauty just holds you. It doesn't let you go. So I just stood there looking at this incredible slender stem. Yet the bamboo is often in Chinese watercolours. Remember a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, people took me around Hong Kong, the first time I've been there. And they asked me what I wanted to do. I was getting bored. If it was you'd go shopping. But what can you do for a month? You can't take them shopping. You know, you went across this old boat over, you know, from the Kowloon side, the territory side to the Hong Kong and back. Yeah, been there, done that. I said, what else are we doing here for the afternoon? There was actually an exhibition of Chinese watercolours. And I thought, well, that's not that bad. I go and look at that. I said, that was really beautiful, because almost every watercolour, these were ancient, you know, top of the range watercolours, they always had bamboo in it. You know why? Because bamboo is a very beautiful plant. It is simple, but almost sensuous, just the way it sort of bends, and this wonderful arc getting slimmer and slimmer. And its colours are very refined. And that was my clump of bamboo outside of Cambridge University, or just at the entrance of Cambridge University Botanical Gardens. It was absolutely glorious. And I had enough self-possession at the time to realise if I continue standing like this for another 5 minutes, someone's going to see me, and they're going to call the people in the white coats and ship me off to the local asylum. Because people, especially English people, don't just stand and watch clumps of bamboo. So I had the presence of mind to go and sit on a bench close by. And you can sit on the bench and look, that's allowable. So I spent about 55 minutes, just staring at this clump of bamboo, had to go back for breakfast. So I resolved to return the next morning, the morning after that, 8 of the 9 mornings, I just spent staring in awe. This incredible, beautiful clump of bamboo. The other day I went to a walk by the river because I really needed the exercise. Well, after the retreat was finished, back to studies again, back to partying, the usual stuff that students do. And I had one free afternoon, and I just thought this amazing clump of bamboo. I wanted to visit again, so I was off on my bike. You know, real students used to use bicycles in Cambridge, they still do. Off on your bicycle, weaving through the traffic, you know, going down Bateman Road to where the gardens were. And going in there, and I was really excited, you're going to see this amazing Kanpa Bamboo again. And it was such a disappointment. When I got to that Kanpa Bamboo, it was the most dry, desiccated, ordinary, you know, really weakly looking Kanpa Bamboo you'd ever seen. Bamboo doesn't grow well in the English climate. It's not supposed to be there. But what was amazing to me is that was so beautiful a few days before. Now it is just like a plant which shouldn't be there. Where's all the beauty gone? And I realized my mind had closed up. And I couldn't see its beauty anymore. It wasn't sensitive enough. If I used in meditation, my mind had opened that much. I could see incredible beauty in a clump of bamboo which was struggling to survive. And that shocked me, but that's how that experience so many times. It is absolutely true, it's a very good sign. After meditation, your mind will get so sensitive, you see far more beauty than you ever expected to see. That's one of the wonderful things about meditation, it makes you so happy. Everything you see in highlight, the colours which are so deep, and greens and blues and reds that you've never seen before. They're always all like that, but you've been close to them. Now it's really open, and a great time. That's why I love meditation with this. Anything gets beautiful and happy. If you have a really good meditation, you go to the beach. That ocean will blow you out of your head. Incredibly beautiful, sparkling, infinite. Wow. So that's what happens anyway. So if you see anybody just, you know, sitting next to one of the lotuses or by the pool or something and looking at the flowers, saying, wow, look at that. Whoa. They haven't gone crazy. They just had a good meditation, that's all. Anyway, one more question that we meditate. Reading the Art of Disappearance, a key concept I approach to alleviating suffering is to disengage. Is to disengage, detach. As lay people, we are not practicing moderating detachments and run a very high and very real risk of confusing indifference with positive detachment. How do we maintain the warm compassion and kindness in our effort to detach and disengage? How and what do we meditate on to achieve this? You know, when you really detach, you have to detach from the correct things. But I know that some people in the West wanted to detach from their precepts. And they would say, you monks, you're just so attached to being a monk. Come on, let go and have sex. Oh, come on, you guys, you haven't got a clue what letting go really is. And what you're really letting go of is not things outside. What you're letting go of is this thing inside of you, which is trying to attach, detach, which is trying to do all sorts of stupid things. Let go of the right thing. This person inside of you, which is always controlling. The thing inside of you which decides, I am going to let go. That is what you've got to let go of. So that way you become totally natural. You're not forced. You're not fake. You are authentic, as people say. And you're not trying to control things. You're being totally natural. When you let go of that thing inside of you trying to control, you're detaching from the right thing. You find what comes up, you can't stop it, you can't resist it, is kindness, compassion. And somebody once say, when you disappear, the only thing left is us. Not me anymore, but us. The relationship becomes more prominent than the individual. That's how we relate becomes important. That's where your compassion comes from. So if you let go of the correct thing, you just warm, compassionate kindness just comes. Am I a warm and compassionate monk? Or am I a pain in your necks? The reason you're here is because I'm warm and compassionate. It's so kind. I think that's reasonably easy to say that. Please write a letter. Have a petition if you think, and get people to sign, Ajahn Brahm is not kind. Then I'll believe you. So that's because I disengage and detach. That's what happens. So I think the answer is, please let go of the correct thing. And then you have kindness. Then you have peace. You have happiness. Okay, there's some more questions, but I'll answer them this evening. Now it is half past, and we want to do, actually just past half past 10, we want to do a meditation before we have our lunch. So remember all the things which I taught you today, and for this meditation, see if you can mess around with the lotus symbol. So there you are, you close your eyes, you've got this lotus, me, this body and mind. How do I open it up? Shine mindfulness and kindness onto this, whatever you're experiencing. And just watch it open up, just as I explore. And I will just let you know when it's done. Close to the end of the meditation. Just watch, three breaths, counting out, in, out, and out. And use this method to slowly easing yourself out of meditation. Enough to keep you going for the rest of the day, but don't stop yourself. And afterwards you can take a rest or go for a walk And then the place is yours for the afternoon. Either meditate here or meditate in your room, whichever is the more convenient for you. Split it between walking and sitting, walking and sitting. The light interviews between 4 and 6. There's a tea time at 5 o'clock. And we'll be back here at 8 o'clock following the evening session. Have a great afternoon. In the evening we do the challenge.